141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on a huge weekend of Scottish football. It's as you were at the top after an incredible 3-3 draw between Rangers and Celtic at Ibrox. It had it all: penalties, VAR checks, mistakes and late drama. And elsewhere there were big wins for the likes of Motherwell, St Johnstone, Hearts and Kilmarnock. I'm Gordon Duncan, and joining me tonight you have Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna.
Well, normally at 6 o'clock on a Monday, Gordon, you get me to say something pithy about the weekend's football to try and encourage our listeners and viewers to phone in with their views. I don't think I can see anything that will offer more encouragement than the 90 minutes we saw at Ibrox yesterday. So, in the immortal words of Delia Smith, let's be having you.
Well, what I'd like to say is, what a game, what a league, what a 90 minutes. And I'm of course talking about Dens Park on Saturday. What a comeback.
That's the game for that
the Steelmen, absolutely.
Did you, say what a leak?
What a leak.
What a leak.
What a leak, sorry. But then I must concede, I mean, is that, take allegiance and emotion out of the game, is that the best Old Firm game for a neutral you could possibly watch for a long period of time?
Well, maybe the best I've seen, I'd have to say.
It's the best, it's the best I can remember for,
but as you
well
say,
over 2 days.
You've just asked an impossible question. You've just asked Glasgow and the West to take emotion and allegiance
that,
out of the equation. But for those of us
the
watching,
fourth 3-3 and 2-4-4s in the last 70 years, I think.
So that tells you, I can remember two of the 3-3s.
That tells you how rare they are. Yep. I think the last 3-3, 2002 at Celtic Park. So far ago, even Mikel Arteta was scoring for Rangers. Last 4-4, I think, 1986. Murdo McLeod equalising at the end for Celtic. So these are rare and they are to be enjoyed.
You don't really need me to tee up any questions. I think you know where we're heading here. So 0141 951 1025. The floor is yours. We'll do the lot and we'll probably need to extend the show until 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. We'll see what Andy Halliday's training schedule is like. But 0141 951 1025. Ibrox yesterday, 6 goals, all the drama, all the controversy, all the talking points. Title race very much as you were. Take it away on the phones or on Twitter at Clyde SSB. There were other games at the weekend. Don't let Andy Halliday down, you Motherwell fans. What a win that was, what a game. But what about that pitch? And where does that leave the next chapter in the title race as Rangers go up there on Wednesday? Get your calls in. If for some obscene reason you need your appetite whetted, what was your result of the weekend, Roger Hanna?
I'm going to go with St Johnstone. I saw them the week before at home to Dundee losing. I thought they were really in the teeth of a relegation battle. They maybe still will be. But to go to Easter Road to win 2-1, and listen, they looked good value for it. And it's a big win back in the capital for Craig Levein.
Is there any point asking me? I mean, should we just no. move on? I'm going to go for Motherwell, of course.
Oh, Motherwell, sorry.
Absolutely. And no team has won more points from losing positions this season than Motherwell, but surely that's the most impressive of the lot. And the catalyst, of course, was taking me off after 75 minutes. Well,
I'm glad you brought it up. We don't have to.
Listen, you've got to laugh at yourself sometimes,
what
don't
you? 2-0. 2-0 down.
2-0, yeah. 15 minutes to go. 2 minutes later, penalty Motherwell. 12 minutes later.
I can hear the conversation. Stuart Kettlewell saying to Stevie Frail, we're going to lure Dundee into a false sense of security.
Ah, is that what it was?
We're going to take off the midfield maestro Halliday. Mm-hmm. They'll think the game's won and they'll switch off. And look,
that rings a bell, that.
Right, goal of the weekend.
Loads of candidates. I know where Andy's going. I'll tell you, I like Theo Bear for your boys at Dundee. I liked Adama Sidibe, second week running for St Johnstone at Hibs. But I'm going to go with Toyosi Olusanya. It wasn't enough to get St Mirren a point at home to Hearts, but what a great individual run and great individual finish by him.
It's got to be Rabi Matondo for me. Crazy because it's an absolute carbon copy from his goal against Hibs last week. And I'm sure from a Celtic point of view, and Yang will be wishing he just showed him onto that weaker left side. But, I mean, there was only one thought in his mind. It was to shift it onto his strong right foot and whip it into that far corner. But to do that, and that the magnitude of that game, at the time of the game it was, in the 93rd minute, goal of the weekend for me.
Okay. Howler of the weekend, what are we going for?
Oh, can I start, Roger, please?
Of course.
I've been waiting 3 days to say this, even ever since I was on the phone to you at 12 o'clock on Saturday morning. Dens Park, it's as simple as that. It's probably been the Howler 2-3 times this season, but I was delighted that we managed to come back and win. So instead of sounding bitter after dropping points to then come out and give my howl at Dens Park, I'm delighted to do it on the back of a win. But the stuff is a disgrace, and I'm absolutely amazed that the game was given the go ahead to go on.
Was it that bad?
Yep, absolutely. Sure. And listen, it's Monday. I'd be really surprised if the game's on Wednesday if there's any more rain up in Dundee.
Howler, the weekend.
Howler, Gordon, I know sometimes we use this segment for something that was light-hearted or humorous or made us chuckle over the weekend, but if we can be serious for a moment, the missiles that were thrown onto the pitch at Ibrox yesterday, it's not the first time it happened. Hopefully it will be the last time. John Kennedy targeted, Matt O'Reilly targeted. I don't believe that Rangers can be held responsible for the actions of some mindless individuals. But what Rangers can do is they can get them and they can make sure they are never back in Ibrox Stadium again, because if they consider themselves to be Rangers supporters, they're wrong. They've let themselves down, they've let the club down, they've let Scottish football down, and the sooner Rangers get them out, the better.
And they've turned the normally light-hearted segment of Howler of the Week into something serious. That's another crime. No, you're well. Right, I think. So it's, that's another crime added onto the list. Let's end on a more positive note. Performer of the weekend, top man.
Listen, I think a lot of clubs and a lot of players were under a lot of pressure going into their fixtures over the weekend with so much to play for. But I don't think anyone was under more pressure than John Beaton and the guys in the VAR room going into that game yesterday. And I thought every big decision out of the three they got right. I've already shown my hand nice and early in the show that what I believe was the outcome of the three incidents. But I thought throughout the full game, I thought they refereed it well. They let stuff go, they let it flow. There could have been early bookings, more than a couple early bookings within the first 5-10 minutes. I like the way he refereed the game and let it flow and let it continue. And considering the amount of pressure he was put under throughout Scotland, I thought he handled himself very well.
And the great thing is, I'm sure everybody will agree on the phone, so just end it there. We won't get any disagreements, I'm certain of it. Roger Hanna, your top performer to lead us.
I'm going to go for a teammate of Andy's. I'm going to go for Georgie Gent of Motherwell. He spoke emotively on the eve of the game about having scored his first senior goal the other weekend, dedicating it to his father who passed away. He spoke about how much the goal meant to him, obviously how much his father meant to the family and to him, and then he goes to Dens Park on Saturday and scores the first goal to kickstart that Motherwell comeback. He's doing really well, and I'm sure Stuart Kettle would love to keep him beyond the end of the season.
Right, that's the scene set. That's the usual stuff on a Monday evening, but let's get stuck right into it. And there is obviously only one place to start. Ibrox yesterday, take it away. What did you make of it? And I don't even need to ask any further questions. There were that many talking points. 0141 951 1025. That is the number you need. So call us right now and we'll get your thoughts on it. Roger Hanna, you've seen more than Andy, so where did it rank for you?
Oh, he's right up there.
Entertainment
wise.
Yeah,
I think I covered the last 3-3 back in 2002 and it was bonkers. And yesterday was just as bonkers, if that is indeed a phrase. At 2-0 at half time, you thought there was no way back for Rangers. Celtic were more dominant than they'd been at Ibrox for quite a considerable period of time. And then suddenly things just switched. Abdullah Seema's introduction seemed to give Rangers a little bit more forward momentum. They got a foothold with the penalty kick. They were almost level straight away with the goal that was disallowed. They then got a little slice of fortune with the deflected equaliser. At that stage, for a split second, you thought, Rangers might go on and win this. And then Celtic go on, and Aramida scores. And you think, well, Celtic have gone on and won it. And then, as Andy said, the finish, Robbie Matondo, an incredible game.
Alan is going to kick things off. Alan, take it away. Sum up your thoughts on yesterday.
Terrible first half. It is just saying your producer ended up an excellent game. A great advert for Scottish football. Mr. John Beaton was put under an awful lot of pressure for the SFA, which he didn't deserve. But alright, that's what VAR's for. A couple of decisions he didn't see. He got every decision right. Maybe, I don't know if Andy will agree, is that a second booting for the penalty? I don't know. And if I can come back with one other wee quick point.
Go for it. Andy?
No, I don't think it's warrants a second booking. I believe the penalty was a correct decision. I actually don't blame John Beaton for his original decision for believing Fabio Silva dived. given his antics in the first 25 minutes of the game. But VAR Nick Walsh stepped in. I thought they came to the correct decision. But for me, no, I don't think it was a reckless tackle. I don't think it merited a second yellow.
Yes, we said this yesterday, Roger. The sort of rules, if you like, or the criteria has changed a bit in the last few years. Everything that used to be punishable in the box, if you like, has kind of now been downgraded by the fact that they've changed this. You know, you used to get a red card straight away for denying an obvious goal scoring opportunity in the box. Yeah. Now, that's only a yellow if you make a genuine attempt to play the ball. Therefore, most other fouls in the box, because I think everybody would agree that's not denying an obvious goal scoring opportunity, they tend to be nothing, no card, unless it is a reckless tackle. Unless it's like a particularly bad challenge, John Beaton could have deemed it yellow card worthy. He didn't on the day, obviously. I think we've seen the usual, you know, ref watch on Sky Sports. Dermot Gallagher didn't think it was a second yellow. I noticed Bobby Madden put some stuff up. That's not to say you have to agree with that, by the way. That's what we're here for, to disagree with everyone. But if you, I know there's a lot of intensity around this fixture, but if with a calm head, look back over the season that we've had, challenges in the box like that just aren't given as yellow cards anymore.
No, it's not a yellow card for me. And I'll give you a point of reference. I actually saw a bit of the Brighton Arsenal game on Saturday night. It was a similar penalty given Tarek Lamptey bringing down Gabriel Jesus, and there was no booking for Lamptey after that, Gordon. So no, I wasn't expecting Alistair Johnson to pick up a second yellow, and I think John Beaton called it right.
You want to come back in, Alan?
Yes, I know it's nothing to do with your programme and it's hard for you to comment. I watched Sports Scene this morning, actually. Michael Stewart's commentary is, I don't know what he's chipping his shoulder towards Rangers Football Club. I don't know if you've seen it or listened to it. His commentary is absolutely horrendous. Shocking commentary. His input towards Rangers Football Club and every decision, I believe, is terrible. And if you haven't watched it, please go and listen to it. It's shocking.
Social media is awash with this stuff, and I've seen from the other side Rangers fans complaining about Chris Sutton's commentary. I've got enough problems worrying about what Hugh Keevan says, quite frankly. This is the guy that predicted 3-0 to Rangers.
Well, he was half right.
So, I mean, to be fair, to Alan acknowledges it. I don't know. I actually didn't hear it, for what it's worth. I don't know what we're supposed to say, because if we have problems. Well, people in glass houses, worry about.
Listen, Alan, if you're employed as a TV pundit or a commentator, as well as educating, informing and entertaining your audience, I think you probably have a duty to your employer to get people talking about your programme. I'll take you back to last week when Roy Keane on Sky described Erling Haaland as a League Two striker in England. Now, not for one minute will Roy Keane believe that, but he knew it was a good soundbite. He knew all the papers down south would be talking about it and everyone would be talking about Sky Sports coverage. So Roy Keane was doing a good job for his employer. I think Chris Sutton was probably doing a good job for his employer by getting people agitated, and Michael Stewart probably something similar for the BBC.
Thanks to Alan for kicking things off. What about Andy in Coatbridge? What's your main takeaway from yesterday, Andy?
Well, John Beaton, to be exact. I'm pretty sure. My point is, Andy said he had a good game, but VAR overturned the vast majority of his major decisions. The head knock to Awata, he's actually standing, sees the two heads hit each other and carries on playing. Now, I'm pretty sure that's a duty of care to footballers. They stop the game immediately when he sees two heads clashing. I'm pretty sure footballers would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the discussion after this is, it's never going to be, if anyone's going to pretend that John Beaton got everything right all afternoon and didn't put a foot wrong, I think clearly they're dreaming, because it's impossible, you know, in sort of any game. I think you're talking about these big match-changing moments. And as Andy said at the top, the pressure, the scrutiny, the bit going in, did John Beaton leave it a bit too long to blow for a head knock? There's every chance. Is that, you know, is that as bad as it got yesterday for Andy on the phone? I don't know.
Well, I mean, the officiating teams got the decisions right for me. So whether you can say that's a triumph for VAR, perhaps you can. When the ball flashed in, if you go through it on one by one, when the ball flashed in for a Celtic penalty, just watching it on TV, I didn't see it hitting corner goals in the arm. When you see the replay, it's actually quite clear. So they get the penalty correct. It was a penalty for Celtic. The second one, the Rangers penalty, at the time when I saw it live, I thought, penalty. And then when John Beaton goes in with such authority and flashes a yellow card at Fabio Silva, I actually thought, oh God, I must have called that wrong. And then you see it again and you realise it is a penalty, and VAR again have got it right. The Rangers goal that was disallowed, when you see the foul in the other half, Gordon, you think, that's a foul. And he plays on, and Rangers score a goal and they bring it back for the foul. So VAR has got it right. So whatever we think about John Beaton, I think the officiating team yesterday has got all the decisions correct. The Iwata win, you listen, Andy, he perhaps could have blown a wee bit earlier. Whether he's unaware of the extent of the injury, I don't know. But I think it was a better day for the officials yesterday than maybe they've had in some other high-profile games.
So in a roundabout way, Andy, was it a really good advert for VAR? Is that what you're telling us?
No, I think VAR was terrible yesterday as well.
All right.
I don't even think that was a penalty. And they made it. He actually made the right decision. That Silva dived. He was going down. He was going down as soon as anybody was near him. At one time I thought, my God, that guy stood in his foot for 10 seconds. He hardly stood in his feet the whole match. Anybody went near him, he was rolling about.
That aspect, Andy, you are absolutely 100% correct. He was in the deck all the time. And I actually think that's what's contributed to John Beaton's original decision to book him, because he was going down so much. I think John Beaton thinks he's dived. But when you actually see it again, it's a penalty kick.
Yeah, I just referenced that 5 minutes ago, that I felt that, you know, it's like the boy who cried wolf. I thought Fabio Silva's antics for the first 20-25 minutes of the game were really, really poor. The theatrics, overreacting, you know, the body check for Alistair Johnson, he's rolling about the floor for 10 minutes, which is why when initially John Beaton books him for diving, I could probably, you know what, he probably has dived considering what we've seen.
You know, it's funny, have you seen the view from behind the Rangers fans behind the incident?
A couple of them's like this, listen, I agree with Roger. I think that's probably had a bearing in why he's gave his initial decision. But when you see it back, I mean, listen, it's 100% a penalty. There's not even a shred of debate for me. But listen, of course, we're going to debate it. But for me, it's nailed on penalty.
You're not having that, Andy?
No, definitely not. And I just think, see, he's diving in that. That also contributes to bad feeling. And the half bottle getting through at Matt O'Reilly, the coins getting through into the dugout. They've seen a guy getting what they think is butchered on the park, and the next thing they're all, well, what's happening here? He's letting him away with that.
There's no excuse for throwing that. Doesn't matter what happens in the park, Andy. No excuses. Andy, I'm not having any excuses offered for those myself has been thrown yesterday.
I know, I kind of know Andy's not excusing it, but in a roundabout way you are, Andy, because it's almost like, oh, it's Fabio Silva's fault. No, it's the dafties who do it, and let's not give them any, you know, leeway, as Roger sort of says. Let's go Thomas as well and see what Thomas makes of it.
Hi, Clyde One, how you doing?
Good,
can I
Thomas.
Can we shout out to my mates, listen, Stevie Stars, please.
Hi, Stevie.
The guy just turned the words out of my mouth, the last call it was called. That was shocking with John Beaton. Absolutely shocking. Just, he lost control of the game. And the coins getting flung onto the dugout and everything. Beaton just lost it.
That's not John Beaton's fault though, John, Thomas, is it?
I think so, yes, because I'm going to disagree with you, because that was never a penalty.
Is this based on the fact that Alistair Johnson touches the ball, Thomas? Yeah, that's where most people come from if they disagree with it, yeah?
He was already getting down. He was already getting down before he crossed the leg, though. He was already getting down on the park. He was already falling.
Roger. Andy's given us his assessment of it.
Listen, I thought it was a penalty kick. There's a wee touch in the ball. It doesn't really change the direction of the ball. Very similar to the Brighton Arsenal one, as I said. And then he catches with, you know, Alistair Johnson's crime. He dangles a leg in too long. He can come away from that challenge. He doesn't need to leave the leg in a challenge. And he catches. You can see the judder of the two legs coming together. And, you know, nowadays, that's a penalty kick.
But listen, Alistair Johnson, he doesn't win possession, but he grazes the ball with his toe and then there's a loose ball in the penalty area. Because by the way, Fabio Silva's by Johnson now. He's got the toe in the ball, he's grazed it.
It prevents Silva getting.
And it prevents Silva getting on a loose ball in the box. So it amazes me that it's even a debate, to be honest with you.
It's kind of the start I expected, but it was a six goal thriller. Yeah. It has had a huge impact on the title race. There were a lot of big moments. We can do the ref thing for the full 2 hours if you want. That is what we're here for. But it might be wise to at least give a bit of credit where it's due elsewhere for the entertainment at some point. But you decide. 01419511025. We'll get you on next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Listen and watch. Check the Twitter feed at Clyde SSB. You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna and Andy Halliday are here. 01419511025. These phone lines are lighting up like you would not believe. Although we should believe it, because this is what Scottish football does on a Monday, particularly after Rangers and Celtic meet. So we are honoured and humbled to have so many of you trying to get in touch. We'll try and fire through some with Stephen in Eaglesham, who's going to go next. Stephen, what do you think?
Oh, I think my howler of the week was for Luke Clement, because when you're confident all week, you're going into an Old Firm Ranger and Rangers are on form. It's a poor Celtic side, and you see Scott Wright in the start lineup, it just dampens all your hopes. And that was proven to be the case, because he, I don't know if he touched the ball in the first half. Rangers were gutless. You see Conor Goldson. Conor Goldson, by the way, is the worst centre-back in this club I think that I've ever seen. He's the only centre-back I've ever seen at this football club that's scared the head in a ball, and that's how he causes that penalty. So I think Philippe Clement really needs to wake up and stop playing some of these players that should never be wearing a Rangers shirt ever again. And that's my thoughts on that.
Stephen just caught me unaware there. We might actually talk about the football game here and who was good and who was bad in the playing staff. So let's embrace the opportunity. From a Rangers perspective, Andy, how would you sum up?
In the game in general, because I was going to start off by saying I've played with a lot worse centre-halves at Rangers than Conor Goldson. But listen, Scott Wright, for me, obviously had a poor first half. I certainly don't think he was the only one. In fact, I think the only outfielder that got past Marks that started the game for me was Dujon Sterling, because he'd done his job. I don't think he offered enough going forward. He was obviously on his weaker left side. But in terms of individual battles all over the pitch, I think the only one Rangers won was Dujon Sterling against Nicholas Kuhn. For me, I thought Celtic were in complete control of the first half. Obviously, it's a game fueled with emotion. There was a lot riding on it, but I thought Celtic were the only one with calm heads. I thought the distances between Rangers strikers and back four was ridiculous in the first half. And I can only put that down to being spooked by an early goal. Because you see when Rangers adjust at half-time, they obviously press, they're more compact, they go man for man. And it looked as if they were, even though it was only 20 seconds, by the way, but you could see with the early way they went to jump Joe Hart, it looked as if that was a game plan going forward. But I thought they were spooked with the early goal. But even if you are spooked, it should only last 5, 10, 15 minutes, and then you get back on the game plan that's ahead. But I thought Celtic just took it completely away from it, and Rangers were very fortunate to go in only 2 down at half time.
You're more or less right, Stephen. Rangers are rubbish in the first half. Don't take my word for it. Cyril Dessers said after the game that Philippe Clement had said to him at the break he didn't recognise them. All the things they'd done well in the 5 months that he's been at the club, they didn't do at all yesterday, and they needed a boot up the backside at half time. Scott Wright was taken off, Abdullah Sima was put on. That change gave Rangers a lot more impetus going forward on that right hand side. Sima got his goal, Matondo come on, Matondo got his goal. But you're right in what you say about a lot of performances. Scott Wright will get the attention because he was the one that was hooked at half time. He could have taken off more than that at half time, no doubt about that. There were a lot who played well below the way they've been playing for Rangers, Goldson among them, but even the likes of Mohamed Diamandé, who's impressed since he came in January, didn't have his best game. Tom Lawrence didn't have his best game. Fabio Silva didn't have his best game, and they really needed a little encouragement from the manager at halftime.
Stephen, Philippe Clement says this was a moral victory for Rangers, but you don't seem quite as positive tonight.
That was embarrassing. See, what I would say about Clement is generally, you look at the performances, you look at the results, he's done a phenomenal job since he's came in when he's not had a squad to pick from, right? So he's been limited because of injuries. He's had to pick the best 11 he's got at hand, and he's done very well with that, right? But he's also never put one word wrong in press conferences. But that comment about a moral victory, that was embarrassing. What are you talking about? The bottom line is, mate, this guy picked Scott Wright to start for Rangers when he had other options. He had Cantwell on the bench, and that baffles me. And I know what you're saying, Roger, about highlighting Scott Wright because he got took off. I'm highlighting the guy not because he got took off, but because he's an awful player that should never wear a shirt.
That was the I saw a start last night, Stephen. I think he's played 9 Old Firm games, but that was the first one he had actually started. He came off the bench for the rest. Yeah. You're right about Clement. He's done well since he's been in. He's got the results that he's needed. He may well continue to get the results he's needing at Dens Park and at Dingwall in the next week. But what he hasn't done yet, he's not, as you would say, picked a team that's managed to beat Celtic. And he's going to have to go, not necessarily beat Celtic, but he's going to have to go and get a positive result at Celtic Park after the split. Whether he thinks a draw does him to match yesterday's draw, I don't know. I'll be fascinated to see what front three he goes with at Celtic Park, because like you, I'm not convinced that environment is the one you would put Scott Wright into. And I'm actually not sure it's one you would put Fabio Silva into either, you know, after his antics yesterday. I just wonder if Rangers might go to Celtic Park with pace and power and Sima and Dessers and Matondo.
Was it a moral victory for Rangers, Andy?
I can understand why he said it immediately after the game, because, well, myself, I don't know if Roger felt the same way. I thought Rangers were dead and buried at half time. Didn't see them getting back into the game at all. And then when they eventually get back to equalise it 2-2 and Adam Eda scores to make it 3-2 in the 88th minute, a minute later, then of course Rangers would take a point. But then you step back and you think of the magnitude of the league going forward. I think, no doubt for me, the draw benefits Celtic more than it does Rangers. Although both teams have, you know, they effectively both have the title in their hands, but from the showings that we've seen in Old Firms this season, and Celtic having, I think it's 4 home games of the remaining 6, I think Celtic will be pretty confident in going and beating Rangers at Celtic Park. Don't get me wrong, listen, there's still so much to play for, which is why it's going to be such an exciting run-in. But for me, I think that Celtic would be more than happy with a draw before the game. Likewise though, like I said, with Rangers coming back from almost down and out to obviously secure the draw, the way the game pans out, Celtic must be coming away for the game yesterday thinking, no, we've dropped 2 points there.
What do you think, title race, Stephen? How does it sit now?
Well, we missed a massive opportunity yesterday. I'm raging at the performance and result, even although we clawed it back from obscurity. I think the manager needs to start picking his best 11 from the start. Yesterday, like you say, pace and power, you need to go away Matondo and Sima from the start, and then if you have to bring guys that Scott Wright on, you do it. The bottom line is, it's still up for grabs. Celtic, I don't think are in any great shapes at all. I think we should have done them yesterday, and I think it's still up for grabs. But yeah, it was an opportunity very much missed for us, unfortunately.
Thank you very much to Stephen. Let's hear that comment from Philippe Clement that we were discussing, talking about this being a moral victory for Rangers.
The second half, we showed our real face, I think. We showed the real things that I want to see. This never-stopping team that has a lot of resilience, that has a lot of hunger, desire to change the results, to do the right things, to create chances, not to give away chances. And then it became a really, for you guys, crazy scenario. For us, the scenario that I wanted. Not with the 2-2 and then the 2-3, of course. But we deserve, and clearly deserve, at least a point today, what we've shown. And I think we're at the end the moral winners of this afternoon, because a few months ago, for sure not this team could have reacted after 0-2 in an Old Firm. And I don't know if many teams in the past could have done it.
Danny's in Hamilton. Next up, Danny, what was your assessment of it all?
I think overall it was a fantastic advert for Scottish football, and I'm not really understanding the narrative behind the refereeing decisions. I think they were pretty clear-cut, and with the use of VAR or not, I think the decisions were taken correctly, and I think the game was riddled with points of real quality at times. I think my Rangers fan myself, but I think we're exceptionally lucky to even be in the game at half time if it wasn't for Jack Butland. And then to see a revival for the team in the second half was greatly received. I think over the piece, Rangers fans were getting into that game knowing that really a draw majorly benefited Celtic, and I think we'll struggle to take anything at Parkhead, and the league at the moment, for what it's worth, looks like it's in the hands of Celtic. And I think Celtic fans should be pleased with that rather than running down into conspiracy theories and referees being against them. But generally, I thought, obviously not at the time being at the game, it was a bit of an emotional roller coaster at times, but having looked back on it, I just thought it was a real fantastic game, and a 3-3 draw is pretty unheard of in Old Firm games. Yeah. So it was
not that we were in any doubt, Roger, but I suppose this reaction already underlines just how much focus people put on the head-to-heads, because yeah. Rangers win at Dundee tomorrow, which they're big favourites to yeah. do, they go top of the league.
Yeah.
So in theory, or on paper, you would think that Rangers are very much in the driving seat, but because there's so much emphasis put in the game at Celtic Park, and Danny, who's even a Rangers fan, is saying, I think Celtic are going to win that game, yesterday is perceived as being a good one for Celtic. So you can probably look at it a number of ways.
Yeah, and also, why Danny's speaking like that is Rangers' recent record in this fixture. They've only beaten Celtic one of the last 10, and that was a meaningless game after Celtic had won last season's championship. As I said in the show on Saturday, I felt Rangers needed to win yesterday to get that monkey off their back, if you like, Gordon, but also to give themselves the best chance in the league. Cameron Carter-Vickers spoke after full-time yesterday, said Celtic have 6 games left, to win the 6 games are the champions. So Rangers need to go...
Same for Rangers, though, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, but I was just going to say, Rangers need to go and show that they can get a result at Celtic Park when they need to. And if you're putting all the onus on the head-to-heads, Celtic have won 2 and drawn 1, so Rangers are going to have to get a result at Celtic Park to prove they're worthy of winning the title.
Yeah, you look across the 3 Old Firm games we've seen this season, there's not been a lot between it, but Rangers haven't beat Celtic even when they have been tight. But not only that, Rangers' record at Celtic Park over the last 10-15 years has been extremely poor, so I think Celtic will have the utmost confidence going into that fixture, they can win the game. That being said, obviously, like you quite rightly pointed out, no, it's in Rangers' hand as well, especially under Philip Clement. We've seen they can go on these runs, long winless runs, unbeaten runs. But honestly, God, for me, Wednesday's is a massive fixture. I really think so. And listen, Dundee, Rangers should be going to Dens Park, or home or away, and beating Dundee. But I do feel as if that, you know, the pitch, it obviously isn't in great condition. And I just don't see it as a gimme under any circumstance. Not to put it all onto the surface, because Dundee have shown they've been a very good side this year and can hurt teams, but I think you need to take care of Wednesday first before you start worrying about anything else.
Danny, any of the stuff that you saw in the first half worry you going forward for the rest of the title running, versus how much does the sort of character or whatever in the second half encourage you?
I think Rangers have notoriously not started Old Firm games very well, which, as the goal went in after 20 seconds, just seemed like history repeating itself. I suppose you could look at various performances we've had, particularly in Europe, the second half against Celtic, that maybe it stayed as well. But I think the way the two teams are playing at the level that they're at, even though there's been some wobbly spells, I don't see any other team in Scotland taking points off Rangers and Celtic. Maybe wrong when the pressure gets to them. I think that Old Firm game is going to be absolutely vital, and as much as it pains me to say, I do think we're going to struggle at Parkhead. I suppose the only difference will be that the roles are reversed, and a draw at Parkhead probably suits us like a draw at Ibrox suited Celtic. So, I suppose we'll just see what comes. I think that game's going to be absolutely massive, and definitely a league decider, so...
Some good points well made, Danny. I love how we've gone from yesterday, this is the biggest Old Firm game in years, and we'll just repeat that then in a couple of weeks' time.
The next one will be bigger,
because it'll be one of the early post-split fixtures, as it generally is.
And as for the Scottish Cup final,
let's one step at a time. Thanks again to Danny. 01419511025. Give us a call. Clyde 1.
£1 million make me a winner.
Win your share of £1 million.
Make me a winner.
Now, I know it feels like that game was the most important thing on planet Earth this weekend, and for many of you it would have been, but on day one of £1 million make me a winner, we paid out £50,000 to Dale the van driver. He's going to buy a house, take himself and his wife Fran away on holiday, and a convertible car as well. We'd like to make you the winner of £52,000 tomorrow. We're upping the ante, and you need to be in the draw by texting yes to 61025, £2 to text plus your standard network rate. You can enter at clyde1.com for £2 or call 0330 880 4523, and the calls are charged at a standard rate. It's over 18s only, and all the rules for this network competition can be found online. If you get the call after 3pm tomorrow, it's very straightforward. Answer within five rings, say make me a winner straight away, and it's £52,000. So text yes to 61025.
0141 951 1025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here, and it is mobbed on those phone lines, so keep the calls coming. Apologies, try and get us through as many as we can. You can tweet us as well at Clyde SSB. Paul tweets to say the one thing people are missing about the next derby at Celtic Park is two of Celtic's best players, McGregor and Hatate, will be back and up to full speed and ready to go, and that will make the difference. Billy is a Rangers fan on the line. What was your point tonight, Billy?
I'm just wanted to speak about Butland. I don't think anybody's mentioned him. I think in the first half, I mean, don't get me wrong, I was there, like, I mean, I'm in Liverpool now, but I was there yesterday, and God, that first half, it couldn't be any worse. It really couldn't. And Butland, I mean, we could have been in 4-5-0 down if it wasn't for him. I don't think anybody spoke about him at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first goal with Tav, I mean, Tav was, that's the worst I've ever seen a Rangers team play. And I'm thinking about, I mean, even before Beale, that's how bad they were yesterday.
Jeez, you watched Andy Halliday's team as well. What about Jack? What about Jack Butland then? Gareth Southgate was there.
He's
probably been Rangers' standout performer consistency-wise this season. How did he do yesterday? Because Billy thought he was good.
I think he's been the best goalkeeper in the league this year. I think the defensive record that Rangers have got compared to the rest of the league shows that. The most clean sheets in the league. I thought he was good. I thought he there was a couple of instances where he kept the score only at two. I personally can't remember any other saves out with the Dyson Maeda one, which is a bog standard save for somebody like Jack Butland, but then a fantastic save for Matt Riley's header. I don't actually remember any other saves. That being said, I still think Celtic dominated the game. I thought they had complete control. If it wasn't just for that final ball, a final decision making, a final finish, where it may be, it could have been more, but I don't know if anyone used what to correct me for any other.
The Matt O'Reilly save was good, Roger.
Yeah, excellent.
Are you the other two goals actually are they're close to him? You know, they sort of go under him. I take it, are most people giving him, you know, no stick really because of the freak nature and how much James Tavernier played a part in the first.
The third one with Ida sort of goes through Dujon Sterling's legs, I think, and it is very tight into Butland. You might cut him a bit of slack. I was just going to ask Andy, as a guy who's involved in this kind of thing, could he have played a better role in the first goal? Because when that ball is smashed forward by Joe Hart, it looks to me that James Tavernier's almost looking either for his goalie to come or for some instruction from the goalie as to what to do and where is Maeda.
Well, for me, no. I think if there's any blame, it's to be laid at James Tavernier, because I think that, number one, you have to almost sense that danger. And listen, Celtic got a slice of luck, but for me, Dyson Maeda's got no right to get even anywhere near the ball, such as the advantage that James Tavernier's got. But then I think when he gets to it, if I'm wanting my goalkeeper anywhere, I'm wanting him to receive the ball off James Tavernier, just lay it back to him. I don't think there's any need to then swivel and kick it out with your right foot. I think he's in a position where he can just pass it back to Jack Butland, and then he can deal with it either switching it to the other side or going long or whatnot. In terms of his actual role within the goal, I think it, number one, the freak nature of how it goes by him. Number two, I actually do think it goes at a fair pace as well. I just don't think he's ever set to make any type of save.
Yeah, because it did go in the middle of the goal.
Yeah, I personally don't lay any blame to Jack Butland for the first goal. I think James Tavernier has to, you know, deal with the situation quicker. And then eventually when he gets there, I believe he can just roll it back to his goalkeeper.
I said yesterday, I think I've spoken to goalies in the past, and I could be wrong, phone in whoever's listening and correct me. The third one, Andy, maybe doesn't look great, but keepers sort of hate those ones.
I had a chat to Liam Kelly about that today, because I think that is one of the ones where any outfielder, any fan, any whoever it is, goalie's got to do better there. But no, Liam says for a goalie they are actually the hardest ones, because
apart from swinging corners and a breeze.
Roger, low blow.
I'm difficult to take the Wolves goalie. I'm sympathising with Liam.
Wait, good. I'm glad to hear
friend
that
of mine.
They said they're almost the most difficult one, because it's in between that, do I try and save it with my feet, do I try and go down and save it with my hands? So listen, for me, I'm an outfielder, so I still think you should save it, especially with someone of that quality. But that was a defence from the goalkeepers' union, as we call it.
There we are. Thanks to Billy on the line. Let's squeeze one more in before Beat the Pundit. Lewis will give us the Celtic perspective. Lewis, what did you make of the game overall?
Yeah, I thought high Baron, if I say that. To go 2-0 up at the going into the first half, then to concede the penalty, which I think is still very harsh. I know he might cut the ball, but I think he was on the floor kind of before he even really get touched. I thought it was shocking from someone to just keep diving the full game. But then you go 3-2 up in the 86th minute to then concede in the 90th minute by a good goal. It's bitterly disappointing. But I do think now Celtic are in the driving seat. I took a draw at the start of the game. And I think to go to Parkhead, I think we can, after yesterday's performance, we can beat Rangers quite comfortable at Parkhead.
What impressed you most about the first half then, Lewis? Because that was clearly the high point, wasn't it?
Just to determine that factor for everyone wanting to it looked like that Celtic team who we needed to win, and a team where we should have won. I thought it was a harsh draw at the end.
Yeah, I mean, you go through a couple of individuals, you can pick different ones if you like, but you know, Daizen Maeda seems to be his most effective in these games, Andy. Rio Hatate was back.
Listen, I'm laughing at myself because I described him earlier as the best Old Firm player I've ever seen. I know that's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it just feels as if any Old Firm game, he's just effective. So effective with the way he presses it. He's almost that front trigger for Celtic to go and get after the ball. And like I touched on earlier, like, I'll be honest, if that's me when that ball's hitting, I'm getting back into my shape because I know I'm not getting there. But Daizen Maeda's got that utmost confidence, like, I'm going to go and affect that ball. And listen, I say it's a slice of luck, but he deserves it almost with the effort he's put to chasing it down. But even his first half in general, a lot's sort of said about, you know, his quality at certain times. I actually thought, out with the one that I can remember, obviously the finish, but I remember there was one, the classic sort of left foot that he crossed it. For the most part, I thought his quality was really good. I think he had the better of James Tavernier at certain periods of the game. But for me, the real standout performer in the first half was Rio Hatate. And I think a lot's been said about, will he start the game? He's obviously just back. He got some minutes against Livingston last week. I referenced earlier about how in a game so frantic, fueled with emotion, sometimes it needs that calm head in the middle of the pitch. I thought that's exactly what he was. I thought he was the one that got his foot in the ball, played forward. You've seen that sort of half-volley switch of play that he'd done to Daizen Maeda. The two chances that Celtic create sort of come from him. You know, the one that he then turns and slips Daizen Maeda in for his chance. And you know, we've sort of went back and forth with Celtic team in terms of when we've praised them, criticised them. But one thing's for sure, they're not as good a team when Rio Hatate is not in it.
Yeah, definitely. I think, listen, Lewis sounds frustrated that Celtic didn't come away with the 3 points. Brendan Rodgers, I thought, might be more frustrated last night. But the way he was speaking, he feels a confidence that with Hatate, with more games under his belt, with McGregor back in the team fit, that Celtic can win the post-split Old Firm game in front of their own supporters at Celtic Park. That will be the decisive moment in the title race. And you wonder,
do you think they both go unbeaten against everyone else after the split?
I think Kilmarnock will have a big say.
It's difficult to see until you see where the fixtures are, because
Celtic will probably go to Kilmarnock though, won't they?
Well, we don't know, because
I know, but probably was the word.
Do they not? Ordinarily, the teams you would think are going to be in the top six, you know, they're due to go to three of those places, but they're not allowed to. The balance, you know, they'll only go to two of those places. As Andy said, four of their last six games will be at home. So you're guaranteed to be at home to Rangers. Which side is it? Could they get a third home game against Kilmarnock or a third home game against St Mirren? Will they go to Tyne Castle?
I hope you're on the show that night. That'll be good.
Well, listen, that doesn't bother me in the slightest. That's just the way the league is set up.
We do it every season.
Somebody wouldn't be happy.
The split has its quirks, and every season there is an imbalance, and every season you have to take it in the chin. But if that happens...
And I'll tell you what, if Celtic had to handpick one to not to go away, it's Kilmarnock.
Draw points at Celtic Park against Kilmarnock.
That's true.
But they've also lost twice at Rugby Park.
Yeah. Anyway.
Hey, can I ask Roger a quick question? Were you surprised, Roger, with Brendan Rodgers' substitutions in terms of Hatate coming off? Or did you just think that lack of game time?
I actually wondered if it was a sort of preordained substitution, that one. Some of the other ones, not so much. As you say, Dujon Sterling looked comfortable against Nicholas Coon, so they swapped him out and Yang came on. Kyogo, for once, wasn't really impacting the game, so he came off and Adam Ida went on and did impact the game. I wonder if the plan was you'll give Hatate however many minutes it was just to get him back into it. And likewise, Callum McGregor will give him 20 minutes or whatever it was that he got. I wonder if they were substitutions that Brendan Rodgers had in his mind before the game.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I agree that it almost feels as if it was pre-planned, but I just think you can't do that when it comes to big games. And you look at Rio Hatate, to me he never looked tired, but who knows.
It's that time of the night already.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Just a bit of light fun before we get back to disagreeing with everything everybody's saying. 01419511025. Beat the Pundit up next. You could play one of these two if you get your call in before 7.
Tackle the headlines. 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here. It's 01419511025. I just did a keyword search on the phone box where I get all the calls through, and John Beaton is trending on the Clyde One Super Scoreboard phone line. So if you want to talk about referees or decisions or VAR, we are here for you. We had moved on to bits about the performance and who it suited and where it leaves the title race and that sort of thing. But you decide. Pick up the phone right now and we'll get you on after this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Right, Beat the Pundit time. These two have it's a bit of a steward's inquiry. They've sort of got 100% records. Depends who you believe. Well, you do, I think, Andy. It's Roger, I think.
Roger
the,
does.
I think Christopher and Ayrshire have
Roger, 100% record for Roger.
Right, okay, well, there's a lot to beat. And I'll tell you what.
I like the fact you've no nibbled there, Roger. Well done.
I'm already going to advertise this. Don't know if it's mind games for you and the caller. Easy questions tonight.
Speed
is going to be of the essence. No, genuinely, really easy. Tommy's in Falkirk. How are you, Tommy?
I'm all right. Good evening.
You ever played before?
Hey, Tommy.
No, first time.
Good, I love it. There is no drop off, by the way. I don't want people to I know I make jokes about it and say everybody phones on a Thursday because Mark Wilson and Gordon Dale are hopeless, but genuinely people want to take you two on.
Big season for Falkirk.
I'm a Rangers man anyway.
I'm just from Falkirk. He's not caring.
Roger.
He's not bothered. It reminded me of the did you hear the caller who called on Saturday and said the last prediction Hugh Keevans got right was David against Goliath? Which is kind of what it's like on a Monday. These two, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Tommy, is that right?
I'll give my best shot.
Good man. Good. Heads, it will be Andy Halliday. Tails, it's Roger Hanna, who we believe hasn't played very often this season. The run continues. It's heads, I'm afraid.
Oh.
Andy Halliday.
It's a two-headed coin. He's gone to Monday.
Roger Hanna.
You should be a two-tailed coin as well until we switch seats.
And I'm not trying to say he's had a bad weekend, Tommy, but Motherwell were 2-0 down when he got subbed and they won 3-2.
Hey, that means we've had a brilliant weekend. Don't you worry about that.
Did you tire them all out?
Exactly. Is that what it was? I'm delighted with 3-2.
Okay. Give Andy Halliday, please, something else to listen to, nice and loud, so that he can't hear what's going on. And I'll give you these questions, Tommy. You've got 30 seconds. Answer as many as you can. If you want to pass and move on, that is fine, okay?
Right.
Let's do it. Your 30 seconds starts now. Who scored Rangers' third goal yesterday?
Pass.
Name either team involved in the Premiership's only draw on Saturday.
Pass.
True or false, Kyogo's got more Old Firm goals than Moussa Dembele?
True.
How many teams in Scotland has Derek McInnes managed?
Four.
Which SPFL side won their league title this weekend?
Stenhousemuir.
What club connects Stephen Davis and Stuart Armstrong?
Southampton.
Outside the Old Firm, which team has scored the most league goals in the top flight?
Hearts.
Okay, let's bring in Andy Halliday. You ready, Andy?
Yes.
Uncharacteristically bad performance from you last week. You still won.
The week before.
The week before, was it?
The week before was really poor. But I was on my Gordon DL.
Aye, he is enough to put anyone off, it has to be said. Hear about him getting locked in the toilet last week?
I seen your wee video, aye.
Ridiculous. Anyway.
Are you surprised?
No, actually, I'm not. After all these years, he finds new ways, though. 30 seconds to Andy, and his time starts now. Who scored Rangers' third goal yesterday?
Matondo.
Name either team involved in the Premiership's only draw on Saturday.
Levy Aberdeen.
True or false, Kyogo has more Old Firm goals than Moussa Dembele.
True.
How many teams in Scotland has Derek McInnes managed?
Three.
Which SPFL side won their league title at the weekend?
Sandwichmeal.
Which club connects Stephen Davis and Stuart Armstrong?
Southampton.
Outside the Old Firm, which Premiership team has scored the most league goals?
Motherwell.
Who does Scotland men's team play next?
Gibraltar.
Okay.
Oh no, too early.
Tommy, you know the mistake. But how much, Tommy, they need to study this. It's like Rangers yesterday. If you concede early, it's hard to recover, isn't it? Well, Rangers did a bit and you couldn't really, honestly, Tommy knows it. How much do you two know this to be true? Because you're veterans of Beat the Pundit. See if you get the first one wrong and you know you should get it right. It's difficult to recover, isn't it? Tommy passed it. It was Rabbi Matondo, and he knows it, obviously. But the pressure.
I was pressured, Tommy. That's what that was.
1-0 Andy Halliday. The draw at the weekend was Livy Aberdeen. 2-0 Andy Halliday. You both fell for it. Kyogo and Moussa Dembele have got the same.
Oh no, that doesn't count.
Oh, that's a bad
that's
one.
That's poor.
Oh, I don't like those.
True or false, Kyogo has more Old Firm goals than Moussa Dembele.
Maybe.
It's false. They're both on
that's
seven.
Sneaky though, Roger.
It's sneaky. It is a bit. 2-0 Andy Halliday. Derek McInnes has managed St Johnston, Aberdeen, and Killy. 3-0 Andy Halliday. I have to say, Tommy, I was worried about the zero. However, you regrouped. You recovered a bit. Stenhouse Muir won the title at the weekend. Five straight draws to secure the title. But the table.
One win and nine.
The league table never lies, and they've deserved it all season long. So well done to Stenny. And you weren't done there, Tommy. Southampton connects Stephen Davis and Stuart Armstrong. Unfortunately for you, Andy Halliday's getting all of these right, and you would expect him to get the next one. It may surprise some people, but they're the entertainers, the claret and amber showmen. Motherwell, believe it or not, outside the Old Firm, are the league's highest scorers, and concede a fair few, which is maybe part of the issue. And I don't know why you're being so hard on yourself.
I know, Rogers. Just, I thought it was the second one,
no,
Gibraltar.
No, it is Gibraltar next. So I think it was a 7-2 to Andy. Tommy, listen, we said it before. A brave man to come on and take these two on. It wasn't enough, but I really appreciate you doing it tonight.
I'll try again.
Good man. I like that.
You're the best, Tommy.
Tommy and Falkirk. There we go.
Do you know, I've never went for the 10, and I thought this was the week.
Interesting that, because you are one of
to be honest, it was the Gibraltar one. I thought I got wrong, not the Kyogo one.
One of the top performers in the Super Scoreboard team. But you're right, you've never got them all right on the night.
No, never.
Oh well, we move on. Anyway, what about Martin in the East End? How are you, Martin?
I'm well, thanks. I hope you guys are well as well.
Hey, Martin.
Not bad, Martin. What do you want to get over to the guys tonight then?
Apologies if it's already been made, because I was listening in the first half an hour and then I came home and
it doesn't matter. We're happy to repeat.
Just about the game yesterday, obviously. I know Andy had said that he thought John Beaton had a good game. And I didn't think it was a terrible game, but our biggest concern sometimes with referees is when they have to go to VAR for blatantly obvious fouls, then there's something wrong. Like the Rangers goal that was chopped off. How did it ever get to that stage? I mean, that's a clear foul and he's looking right at it. I don't understand it.
Yeah,
with the head knock, which I know somebody else had mentioned. I go, how does that need to be, like the referee can miss the two simple things and right in his eye view?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got another point after that. I'll let you obviously come back and me this one.
I think that's sort of what's the word I'm looking for? That's the beauty. It's probably the wrong word. Of VAR, it's up to you what you do as a fan or a pundit or a player. Do you sit back and sort of say, well, as long as the outcome is reached at the end, you know, take it. No, Martin wants to pin John Beaton on not spotting the foul on Iwata, which is fine and it's valid. And by the way, I think the way that works, I think refs are still marked down for things that they miss. You know, if VAR corrects something, yeah, I think the ref is still marked down. So Martin's bang on that. But for other people, they'll say, well, yeah, okay, he missed it in the middle of the park, but that's what VAR's for, and it should have been ruled out. I think everyone agrees.
I think of all the decisions, that was the kind of obvious one that he got wrong for me. He was well positioned, he was right up with play, he was looking straight at it. He didn't deem it to be a foul. I think most people on the ground thought it was a foul. Certainly watching it on TV, you thought at the time, that's a foul. And play raged on, and Cyril Dessers put the ball in the back of the Celtic net. And then the VAR called John Beaton to the screen and said, listen, you should look at that again. I think that's a foul. And John Beaton corrected his decision. So I tend to be in the camp of, if they get the decision right as an officiating team, that's a good thing.
Yeah, because we're in danger. This doesn't even need to be about this game, but I've noticed this over the season. We can be quite selective about who gets the blame for what.
Yeah.
All the drama at Tynecastle a few weeks ago, it was all about John Beaton mm-hmm. in the VAR room, and no one really seemed to focus too much on the on-field referee.
Yeah.
Whereas yesterday, partly because of that maybe, and the fact that it was John Beaton, there's focus on the on-field referee and very little said about who was in the VAR room. So I don't know, are we becoming a bit selective?
Certainly. But I agree with Roger in terms of the three major incidents. You know, I referenced that my initial reaction to the Rangers penalty was, you know, what Fabius Silva could have dived because his antics previously in the game. So I could forgive John Beaton for that. Also, with the goal, someone, I thought it happened so quick. You actually see his position, his arm, most parts of his arms tucked in, that happened so quickly. I know this never really matters, but no Celtic player really appealed the penalty, so you can sort of forgive him for that. But when Dessers put the ball in the back of the net, my first reaction straight away is this will be ruled out. I thought instantly it was going to be a foul, regardless, even if, no, Tom Lawrence did get a toe on the ball. I thought such was the force that he comes across Iwata's knees and sort of swipes him and takes him out. Yeah, I thought that was a foul. But likewise, as long as the big decision was ultimately correct, I think that's all that matters. And I think as an officiating team, they got to the right decision.
Are you unhappy with the penalty incident, Martin? Because again, that would fall on both, wouldn't it? John Beaton has to make the final decision. But initially, he books Fabio Silva. He thinks it's a dive,
which I think was a correct call. But again, if you slow everything down, which we're seeing a lot more and more, it either looks worse or it looks more of a foul. Fabio Silva, that's embarrassing. I don't know why players, and I'm not just singling him out, I don't know why players think they can get away with theatrics with the amount of cameras now that are on a football field. It's just embarrassing when then you overview it and you go, what is he actually down for? Because half the time it was nothing. But the penalty, that's subjective, so I understand that. My point with the goal, it's another talking point. It shouldn't have been a talking point because it's a clear foul. I don't understand why he thinks it's not a clear foul. So he then lets it run to be a goal, which then obviously, as you would do as a fan, you're celebrating. But you're going, but how did it get to that stage? That you don't need VAR. That's just in your eye line. You can see that's a foul. That's what I don't get. My other point, sorry, just to come on, because again, they're all subjective, as the Rangers manager felt, come on. And I think it was Neil Lennon said in the Sky Studios, I'm not having that, what he said. And I couldn't agree more. I know I'm a Celtic fan, so that might shock people, probably won't. But I don't know what he's talking about with the Rangers penalty. He's trying to say Conor Goldson, it wasn't a penalty really, and he tried to get his arm out of the way. I'm sorry, is he watching a different incident for the rest of us?
I think he did that old thing that we, loads of people do it, pundits do it as well, and sort of say what they think the handball rule should be.
Oh, that's me all day.
Versus what is. I have to say, Roger, just having pored over loads of these,
it's a penalty kick.
Yeah, I didn't even think it was necessarily one of those where you go, oh, it's that new pesky rule. No. You know, I didn't even think it was that close.
It's a penalty kick. It was one in Paisley as well, St Mirren against Hearts. Marcus Fraser get penalised for a handball as well. Nowadays, if you extend,
but again, to be fair to that one, that's like sliding in and proximity, because Andy was involved.
Joe Shaughnessy,
arms out, but it's so close. So do we take proximity? I don't feel like Conor Goldson's was one of those. It was, I think even a few seasons ago, that's still given as a handball.
It's a handball. It's a penalty.
Martin is unhappy about the penalty, like many are. He did say, to be fair, you know, it's subjective. He's not going overboard on it. The main defence, Roger, all you're going to hear really is, He got the ball first. Mark Wilson was saying it yesterday. Is that mitigation for you?
No, it was the same. I keep referencing the Lamptey versus Gabriel Jesus in the Brighton Arsenal game. He touches the ball. He doesn't clear the ball. He makes no great impact to the ball. The ball is then still in play to be won. Fabio Silva's trying to move on to the ball and he keeps his leg dangled. He makes contact with Fabio Silva's leg and prevents Fabio Silva moving on to the ball. It's a penalty kick.
And Martin's other point, which I actually do get again, I suppose if you had preference, you'd want the referee just get everything right straight away and then not need VAR. Yeah. I think everybody would agree with that. But the hype around the debate is almost, it's almost out of control. It's almost a self-fulfilling thing, because that Martin's saying, I mean, it shouldn't become a talking point. If John Beaton gives the free kick in the middle of the park, it doesn't become a talking point. But I think also we've got a choice to say, well, if the right decision was made in the end, I don't want it to become a talking point.
Things have gotten point as well, Gordon. We've seen goals disallowed. I saw one at Livy at the weekend. I mean, Miofsky's goal disallowed. We've seen lots and lots of goals disallowed by VAR. I think this was unusual because of the circumstances. You very seldom see play brought back 70 yards right to the very start of the APP, as you talk about the attacking phase of play. It's just an unusual way to disallow a goal. But ultimately, they got it right.
And the difficulty, Andy, I'm not sure this one was difficult, by the way, but generally, the attacking phase of play, as Roger says, there's no like time constraint. It's not like someone starts a clock and it has to be scored within X amount of seconds. Celtic actually do even get a touch of the ball, but it's almost like a feeling that you get, you know, when that foul takes place, is that Rangers then on the attack? Mm-hmm. Are they still on that same attack when Desor scores? I think most people would say yes, wouldn't they?
Listen, if a Celtic defender, when it initially gets blocked, then regains possession, goes to play a pass outside the box and Rangers intercept it and score, then we're talking about a different story. But there's a couple of blocks here and there, but Celtic were never in control of the ball, and then Desor pokes it in at the back post. So I don't think there's any debate that ultimately it was still in the attacking phase of play. And no, it's a funny one, because I did think straight away, Phil, I did. But obviously John Beaton never, but it doesn't really matter, because like you says, the right decision was made.
And I think the way they work it as well, Roger, it's, you know, had Rangers take possession, then Celtic go right behind, you know, the ball, get back in shape, and Rangers start passing it around at the back four, stringing it, goes forward, it goes back, forward, back. At that point, it probably would have reset the attacking phase of play.
Yeah.
But
maybe that's what they should have done. Just turn back.
Yeah.
Kept it.
But I think it's, for most people, it was the same phase, wasn't it? I don't think there's much.
No, I don't think
too much debate. Really. Anyway, well, thanks to Martin. Some interesting points well made by Martin in the East End. If you want to join him, now is the time to pick up that phone.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Hear it. Watch it. Search the YouTube stream now. Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
We'll keep the phone calls ticking along at a good speed, so I'll very quickly give this question to Andy and Roger, and you can play along.
The full-time teaser with Universal Interiors East Kilbride, where their goal is a better wardrobe, slat wall, home office or media unit.
I do think generous for two men of your intellectual football capacity. So again, maybe you could try and get none wrong. We'll see how we go. And you at home can play along and see if you can get them more efficiently than Andy and Roger. Thanks to David and Knightswood, prior to yesterday, there have been 9 penalties taken in this fixture since 2017. Can you name the 7 players who've taken them? So obviously some players took more than one. So basically, can you name 7 players who've taken a penalty in an Old Firm game before yesterday? I think you'll nail these, but take it away.
We don't get one wrong again this week.
Go for it.
The Hannah man. Prior to yesterday?
Yes.
Okay. James Tavernier.
Yeah. Okay, he was the most recent before yesterday as well. 2023. Roger.
Alfredo Morelos.
Yes. And one more guess.
Ryan Christie.
Yes. Okay, we'll leave that there. I do think these two, because they're sad and they spend too much time thinking about these things, they'll get it all. But you could play along at home. And if you want to submit a question, just like David Knightswood has, it's fulltime@clyde1.com on the email. Alec is on the line. How are you, Alec?
I'm good, thank you.
What's your point tonight then?
I'm phoning up regarding the Old Firm game yesterday, and
some of the decisions and the kind of concerns that some fans have expressed regarding the incidents. Like Andy and Gordon, I agree with every decision that was made yesterday. I think it was a penalty kick to both sides. I think the Rangers goal that got chopped off should have got chopped off. I think that both teams were quite fortuitous that they got a deflected goal. The first Celtic goal was a deflection and the Seymour goal was a deflection. But what I wanted to say that I felt, I mean, Celtic should have won that game at the park yesterday. It should have been done and dusted at half-time. But obviously I'm delighted that we managed to come back in and grab the result and we got a draw with it. But what I thought was the point that cost Celtic the victory wasn't a bad refereeing decision or a deflected goal or anything else. I thought it was a decision by the Celtic player Yang, who decided to defend the corner flag as opposed to the goals when he showed the boy the inside as opposed to showing him down the wing. I thought ultimately Celtic's defence for the Matondo goal, as good as it was what cost Celtic the victory, and it wasn't any bad refereeing decision.
Andy, I think you all know how you're supposed to defend it. Is it easier said than done when players like Matondo shift it quickly, or can you still do more?
Listen, when he's that quick, sometimes it is difficult, but I think when it is someone like Rabbi Matondo who relies on his stronger sort of right foot, and it's at that position in the box, I think you just over-exaggerate the line. I think if he's going to take you down the line, he probably beats you anyway. So you over-exaggerate, make sure he doesn't come into that stronger right foot, especially, like I said at the top of the show, when he scored that exact carbon copy of the goal last week. So, also, I don't know if you remember in the build-up to the incident as well, Johnson has a scenario where he's dealt with for the first sort of 85 minutes of the game. I think he'll look back at that and think he can deal with that better. But Yang, to me, looks as if he was a winger defending his own box, and that's exactly why he's allowed Rabin Matondo to come and get a strike at goal.
Yeah, well, listen, it's easy to have a pop. We're discussing off air before the show, Ali. I actually thought Todd Cantwell rolls it to John Lundstrom, and I thought John Lundstrom was going to drive into the box, and he played what I thought was a sort of almost passing the buck pass to Rabin Matondo, never thinking for a minute Matondo was going to move inside and produce what he produced. But Yang, you know, Andy said, oh, he did something similar against Hibs last week. I'm sure Yang Hyung-jun wasn't watching Rabbi Matondo do that against Hibs last week. He would probably think, I'm up against a left winger here, let's move him inside in his right foot. And he didn't defend it well. He defended it really poorly.
I take your point. And if you mean goal. I don't know what Yang does in his spare time, but the level of analysis, you know, you always see when players are coming on now, and the manager stands with the iPad or the notebook, or the assistant coach does it, or the goalie coach. Is that not what they're... What are they discussing at that point? Who they're up against?
So much before you're coming on, but definitely the build up to the week. I think they would have done plenty of analysis on what they're going to prepare for, what their game plan is, individuals at Rangers, what's their strength, what's their weaknesses. I'd be amazed if Rangers last maybe 5-6 goals domestically weren't shown. So that would mean that Rabin Matondo's was one of them. So
was it a mixed bag for Celtic subs, Alec? Because Adam Ida obviously comes on and has a really good impact. You've mentioned Yang, and then the big talking point all week was Callum McGregor and how important it was that he made the start. He didn't make the start, and then you assume he's to come on and calm things down and give Celtic some control back, and then of course he makes his mistake as well.
I think you can look at the substitutes on both sides, both teams. I think that Rangers should have started with Sima and Matondo, and like you're saying there, I mean, I never played football at any level, but I'm a fan, I like the game, obviously. But I can't, for the life of me, see when a player's coming back for an injury and maybe the management and the mentality is this player's only got 20 minutes in him. Well, if that player's the best player he is for 20 minutes, why not play him in the first 20 minutes? Do you know what I mean? I can't get my head around that at any level. I think, if McGregor's one of the best players, you play him for the start, you play him for the 20 minutes that he's fit for, and then you take him off in the same way Sima and Matondo for Rangers. If they're the best available, you play them for the first 20 minutes that you hope that they're effective, and then if you manage to get yourself into cruise control, then you can make the substitutions. Doing it the other way about doesn't make any sense to me, but I suppose there's a level of, naiveness in my part, I suppose.
It's funny though, a point one of you made about Rio Hatate and how preordained things are, Roger. Yeah. I wonder how difficult that is for a manager, because clearly everybody, let's not pretend otherwise, everybody assumed Celtic would need Callum McGregor at some point. and then perhaps it was assumed that Rio Hatate would need to come off at some point.
Yeah.
When you now look back at it, was the need for either as big as we thought? And I do appreciate I've got hindsight here.
Yeah, it's funny how football changes. I mean, 30 or 40 years ago, if Callum McGregor could walk in a straight line, he'd have started the game yesterday. I think now managers are so reliant on their sports science advice, on their medical team, on the data analysis, on all the stats. I actually heard Philip Clement talking about it a week or two back, and he was saying, well, you know, we might get 30 minutes from Seaman, we might get 45 from Roof, and we might get 20 minutes from such and such. And I'm sure that was going through Brendan Rodgers' mind as well at the weekend. Could he throw in both McGregor and Hatate when they had so little time together? So I would imagine the sports science and the data played a part in Celtic's selection yesterday. I tend to be with Alec. I'm old-fashioned, I'm old, and, you know, if they can play, get them on from the start. But I know that that's not the way the modern-day manager considers these things.
Speaking of midfielders who've recently come back from calf injuries, and I know that's where the similarities end before anybody moans about it, is it a difficult one because, you know, that kind of explosiveness, mm-hmm. is it a bit tentative? Like I say, similar scenario the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and it was my scenario, I played through it for 2 or 3 games, and you just know something's not right. You don't feel as if you're turning sharp enough, or you're sort of top speed, you're getting really into your stride. But obviously Callum McGregor's been the opposite. He's been out for a period of time, he's came back, he feels like he's okay. But sometimes it's just that mental block where, you know, am I really truly fit? I want to get back for this game, I want to make myself available, but it's 100%. I've not had a lot of time on the grass, I've not trained too much. But listen, like, I always felt like if Callum McGregor had even a 60% chance of being fully fit, he was going to play in the game, or certainly some part of the game. Like he says, we've got the beauty of hindsight after the game, where he came on, didn't quite look like his normal self. But the big one for me was Hatate, because I just felt, and again, I think he is that type of player, similar to Maeda, where he's full of energy, he's industrious, so you never really feel like, oh, he's struggling within the game. But I felt a change was needed for Celtic. I just didn't envisage that Hatate was going to be the one coming off. I thought you could maybe get another sort of 15-20 minutes out of him. That being said, Paolo Bernardo comes on and obviously makes a big impact in the third goal for Celtic, and not really spoke about enough either for me, as much as it was uncharacteristic error from Callum McGregor. Dujon Sterling so proactive to be in the front foot, to read the pass, nick it, and obviously leads to the equaliser.
It's funny because this is what the week can do. Maybe tomorrow we'll be taking more of the football stuff, because a lot of the controversy has been tonight. How's Matt O'Reilly's composure for you? How relaxed can one human being be?
Yeah. We see Panenka's now more than ever, but in that game, you just never expect it, do you?
Didn't even think, like,
which is probably why it's smart sometimes.
Also, like, has he even taken a penalty for Celtic before?
And it begs the question, why is he not? Especially when they've missed so many this season.
I'd be worried it didn't reach the goal if you did that. But it was ultimate coolness, composure, great finish.
Yeah, it was indeed. Thanks, Alec. Some really interesting points. Appreciate you getting in touch tonight on that usual number. You can tweet away till your heart is content as well if you want to, at Clyde. Oh, it says, I've actually didn't mean this, genuinely. I didn't have Twitter on my screen, and I've gone back, and Shannon has just tweeted to say, can we have a shout out for O'Reilly's penalty? The pressure on the early penny showboats with a Panenka. Imagine the reaction if he missed it was spectacular. Shannon, I don't mean to worry you, but it sounds like we're on the same wavelength here, which is not a good place for you to be. Jay is on the line in Whitburn. How's it going, Jay?
Yeah, it's doing great. Yeah. I'm a little bit behind on my YouTube channel here, so it's a little bit confusing.
Don't worry about that. You're now live with us, so what are you thinking tonight?
Well, I've got a quick question, couple of questions for the panel. I was at the game yesterday, and obviously, you know, your emotions are all over the place, and you're giving it loudly to the referee and everything at the time. So you know how it is when you're at a game, you get back and you have a look at the replays and that. And I've got no problem. When I see the replays, I've got absolutely no problem with none of the actual big decisions. But I'd like to ask the panel, firstly, there's been a lot made of this this penalty, the fact that Silva caused. And what I'd like to say is, like, to me, it's a Stonewall penalty. I know he was diving. We was all giving it to him, all the Rangers supporters, and some of us said at the time, like, get up, you know what I mean? Because obviously he's seen him do it so much, he just thought, get up, that ain't us. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was a Stonewall penalty. What I would like to ask, I think it was Gordon as well that said a little while ago, that when Johnson stuck his foot out, he left it out, you know. And when I watched that, he left his foot out and high purposely. So for all Celtic supporters going on about, you know, he shouldn't have had the penalty. Actually, the Stonewall. And actually, really, maybe he should have been sent off for a second yellow. That's the first question.
Yeah, I think we it came up a little bit earlier, but you're fine to raise it again, Jay. I think the bar they kind of look at is it's only going to be a second yellow now if it's considered a, you know, like a reckless tackle, a particularly reckless one. Did you feel it fell into that category?
Oh, well, I thought he was deliberate. I didn't know if it's, you know, I thought he deliberately stuck his foot out and, like, you know, a player, Silva was going at sort of towards the ball speed and he's deliberately left his foot high and out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, Roger, the good thing is I can be consistent in this. I always say intent doesn't matter. It doesn't matter either way, really. You know, I'm not trying to get someone off with something or you know, pin something on them. Intent, I think that's why they've removed it, so that you don't need to worry either way. And again, it comes back to this reckless notion. I can't remember if I raised this point earlier, where I spent the afternoon almost thinking about penalty decisions generally this season in the box, right? You know, like tackles in the box. We'll remove handballs because it's not really relevant. It's not comparable. The most recent one I could think of was in the cup when, was it Jordan Obita brought down James Tavernier?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did I make this point earlier?
No.
Can't remember.
No.
The other one from the game that caused loads of controversy was Alex Cochrane gave the penalty away against Celtic. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remembered one at McDermott Park when Dujon Sterling burst into the box and Andy Considine slid in.
Yeah.
None of those ended up in bookings, and it goes back to something we said earlier. Everything's now kind of downgraded in the box. It needs to be a particularly reckless tackle for it to be a booking, and it, none of them, like I mentioned, were. And the one at the weekend certainly wasn't.
No, I don't think it was ever going to be a booking. I think Jay's right, it was a penalty. I think the rule says, you know, people talk about he touched the ball, he did, but I think the rule says, you know, if you continue in, it can still be a penalty if the challenge is careless, reckless, or with excessive force. And it was careless in so much as he didn't take care to remove his leg. You know, he dangled the leg out longer than it was necessary. He made contact with Silva. He brought the player down. Mm-hmm. So, as we said earlier on, it's a penalty kick.
So that's the bit, Andy. I know these are just words to some people, but that's what the ref bases it on. So John Beaton thinks it's careless.
Yep.
That's why he gives penalty, no yellow card.
Yep.
If he thinks it's reckless, he goes penalty, yellow card.
Yep.
And certainly excessive force would be the same.
Actually, John Beaton thinks it's simulation.
Yeah.
Oh no, but you think you'll find he makes the final decision in the end. Correct. That's what we're told, aren't
he's,
we?
He's been corrected by his so. Father.
But I don't have the fancy jargon words that the laws dictate. But the big thing for me is, although he gets a graze with his toe on the ball, Fabio Silva still by Alistair Johnson. There's a loose ball in the box that he's going for, and because of the dangled leg, he's then impeded and fouled, and that's the reason the penalty's given.
The word careless isn't that fancy or clever, just for what it's worth.
You never went to my school.
I think you're doing yourself an injustice there. Jay, what about the big picture? Is that, I don't know, is it a good result because of the comeback? Is it advantage Celtic, advantage Rangers? What's the big picture?
Well, it's funny because, I mean, obviously going into the game, we really wanted a win. I don't think it was as big as what people made out. I think it was big for us. If we won, we'd probably go on and win the league. So it's bigger for us. We still got a chance. But, it was disappointment, obviously, all the way through. But at the end, it was funny because we'd just come out there elated. Like, you know, we'd just come out there really happy. And it was, you know, it was a strange feeling after getting a draw. I just wondered, one more thing, just to ask. I said before the match, and it was strange, because of, obviously, the pressure Beaton got off of Celtic, and obviously then you got Colin got pressure off of Rangers as well. And I thought to myself, I wouldn't mind betting that they don't want to make any decisions because they've been under so much pressure and they leave it all to VAR. I'm just wondering what you think about that.
I don't know. I think judging, if you look, I'm a veteran of these things, referee selection, who'll get the win at Celtic Park. Willie Collum's not had a league game between them this season. I would suggest Willie is in pole position for the game at Celtic Park. Believe me, Jay, Willie will have no problem making decisions.
And I get that, that's what VAR does across the world, Andy. You're always good. There is that accusation almost that they leave it to VAR. But again, John Beaton did make a decision on Fabio Silva. He had to correct it, but he made one.
Yeah.
And then in a, maybe I'm splitting hairs, but seeing a roundabout way, the foul on, is it Iwata, sorry, in the middle of the park, he does make a decision. He doesn't give a free kick.
Yeah.
Now, we've fallen into the trap of thinking you're only making a decision if you give something. Mm-hmm. Not giving something is a decision. Mm-hmm.
And what VAR is a safety net if you don't get the decisions right. And ultimately that was the case, and the officials as a combined unit came to the right decisions in the end. So
did Motherwell get away with one on Saturday? Is the proximity harsh on Joe Shaughnessy?
No. As the neutral in the panel here, I think it's a penalty.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a Motherwell player and I think he's hard done by. Genuinely. Because of
proximity.
Yeah. But you know my stand with handballs in general.
You said the same about Graham Shinney and the game at Fir Park. You'd have felt hard. If you were Graham Shinney, you'd have felt hard done by.
This is players union not, stuff.
No, but I wonder
Stuart Kettlewell takes you off.
I used that as a barometer of the one that got rolled out with Theo Bear, which should never have been rolled out. So I just compared the two. I did that perfect example where nothing's the same, but we'll compare it anyway.
Do you know who should have been your howler of the week? The steward that's trying to shoo Stuart Kettlewell away from celebrating with the Motherwell fans.
Honestly, what were they doing?
Lighten up.
I know.
You don't even know the game's on till 1 o'clock. You have to travel 2 hours to get there, pay your hard earned, you're 2-0 down,
running mud for 90 minutes,
and watch the team produce the comeback, and the manager's not allowed to go and celebrate with the fans, according to a steward, Roger Hanna.
The only guy that's had a worse afternoon at Dens Park was Dave Galloway, who battled through Storm Kathleen. There's no Wimpy in Dundee, manages to get in Dens, the game's eventually on, and he can't get his machine to work.
Unbelievable. Thanks to Jay, and more of your calls next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Listen and watch. Check the Twitter feed at Clyde SSB. Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
We're on the home straight. I knew it would be quick tonight, I have to say, but it's been extremely quick. And I, as always, half apologise if we haven't managed to get your talking point out there, but it's been a thankless task for the guy in taking the calls through there who will go and lie in a darkened room. I am absolutely certain about it. If you want to keep them coming tomorrow night, and we're here for you all week, that's why we try and come on every night. And of course, this is just gonna pick up pace, really, because the reaction to Sunday would normally rumble on for days and days and days, maybe weeks, and I'm sure it still will. But actually, for Rangers, how big does Wednesday become?
Oh, it's huge. Every game's huge now. There is no margin for error anywhere. Rangers need to go to Dens and win. I think they won 5-0 there earlier in the season. Even Sam Lammers scored a goal. They need to go.
He's on fire, by the way.
Yeah, they need to go to Dingwall and win, which hasn't always been easy. And then they'll find out the post-split fixtures. For me, they'll need to get a result at Celtic Park. That is the crux. They need to get a result at Celtic Park. I thought to win the league, they possibly needed to win yesterday. They didn't. The way the game went, I don't think a point in the final analysis is a bad thing for Rangers. They need to get something at Celtic Park.
Let's bring in Declan on the phone line. How are you, Declan?
Not bad, mate. Thanks.
What's your point tonight?
It's just about, obviously, the incident yesterday. When is this all going to stop? Like, obviously, before the glass and the thing, obviously, the ball to Joe Hart yesterday with the bottle thrown. I mean, when's this all going to stop?
It's an excellent question, Roger Hanna. I wish I had an answer. So,
listen, I mentioned it at the top of the show at 6 o'clock, Declan. I think it's now incumbent on Rangers to weed these individuals out. There is a lot of CCTV analysis.
That was the issue, apparently, was it not, with the Joe Hart one? Is that not the case?
I was thinking there was a lot of talk about CCTV.
You know, the
member
time
of Celtic's medical team was struck by a missile in a recent game at Ibrox. There were now two separate incidents yesterday involving John Kennedy and Matt O'Reilly. It can't go on. Rangers need to weed out these individuals. The authorities need to deal with these individuals, and Rangers need to make sure they are never allowed back into Ibrox Stadium. Rangers are very fortunate that neither John Kennedy nor Matt O'Reilly were injured yesterday. Otherwise, this phone in from 6 o'clock wouldn't have been talking about Fabio Silva's penalty, Robbie Matondo's equaliser, or Celtic substitutions. Something needs to be done now. I know both clubs are in discussions with Police Scotland over the incidents yesterday, and people need to be weeded out, I'm afraid.
I mean, Andy, everyone always says the same thing, but because it's so valid, like, imagine that had hit him. Yeah. That's what people say. And is it only going to stop when that happens, as Roger mentions? It's just like when you watch, and for the avoidance of doubt, you shouldn't throw anything, quite obviously. But you know, you see the pie at Lauren Shanklin.
I was actually going to bring that up because we had a wee laugh and a joke about it, even though you shouldn't condone it whatsoever.
But it's not funny because it was a bottle opener thrown at Lauren Shanklin in the same incident.
I get that. When you see a glass bottle, like it does make you shudder to think about if and when that goes particularly wrong and what that means for you guys and your safety in the workplace ultimately.
Yeah, and listen, it obviously goes without saying there's absolutely no place for it in a football stadium, and Rangers need to do their utmost to find who the culprits are and weed them out and, like they say, punish them accordingly. And you can't help but think, I mean, it's a glass bottle, Gordon. What happens if it does hit Matt O'Reilly on the head and the eye, whatever it may be? And listen, you just hope whoever it is, the culprits are get found out.
And this is a tweet straight away, right on cue, from Ryan Clark, who says Declan's clearly got a short memory, and he's attached a video of Celtic fans appearing to throw things into the Rangers' end. That is the kind of the problem in a nutshell. I don't think anyone's suggesting that fans of other clubs have never thrown anything.
We can't have points scoring over missile throwing, I'm afraid, Gordon. All missile throwing is wrong. Whether it's a glass bottle, whether it's a coin, whether it's a bottle opener, whether it's a pie, don't do it. There's no place for it in football. Clubs need to get stronger, and clubs need to weed out these individuals and get them out the stadiums.
We've had the debate many times over the years, Roger, even before I was on the show. I remember listening to it. Is there an onus on clubs to try and really weed out individuals, or before the pressure of strict liability then builds again? Because again, I think everyone agrees that can be hard for clubs. So what, clubs get punished as soon as one daft idiot does something, and you can see where that would be hard to enforce as well. It's got its difficulties for sure. But that seems to be the best way of avoiding it, is making sure that when the isolated incidents come along, they're dealt with.
I've never been a fan of strict liability. You know, I don't think clubs should be held responsible for the actions of rogue individuals within their support, if you like. Where there is a responsibility for all clubs is to identify those rogue individuals and get them out the grounds, make sure there's banning orders in place, and make sure they are dealt with by the criminal justice system in the country.
Thanks, Declan. I think it was a very fair point to raise. Thanks for joining us tonight. It'll probably be the last phone call, looking at the time up there. I mean, I do apologise. I think there's an inevitability about it. These phone lines have been red hot. We could keep going with this stuff genuinely for hours. I'm not saying it for effect, but a word on some of the guys and teams that deserve a bit of credit. St Mirren, not the result they wanted, but clinched top six at the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. First time since the mid-80s they've been the top six back-to-back seasons. Stephen Robinson is doing an absolutely wonderful job there. Well done to Hearts, you know, who went there and won. Not an easy place to go and win.
No, cemented Lauren Shankland.
In third without Lauren Shankland. Well done to Kilmarnock. Look, cemented in fourth, don't they? And that would mean European football for Derek McInnes at Rugby Park next season. Not so long ago they were in the Championship. And a big win, as we said at the top of the show, for Craig Levine. It's put a wee bit of water between him and Ross County, and it looks to me that it's Livy down, and Ross County will need to do very well to avoid that playoff for a second successive season.
Yeah, I think there's going to be plenty of twists and turns from now to the end of the season, but you do feel that win for St Johnstone away to Hibs at Easter Road was massive. And I just feel as if they have been a bit of a strange team, St Johnstone, recently. When you don't expect them to get a result, they managed to dig out a win out of nowhere. And, you know, you quite rightly pointed out back-to-back wins for Hearts at St Mirren for a long, long period of time. Again, going into that game, I thought it was going to be a real I thought it could have been anyone's game, but when you see that Lauren Shanklin's not in the starting 11, you do feel as if he almost tips at St Mirren's favourites. And Kilmarnock, Derek McInnes, you just seem to be that team that, that know how to get results.
Right, quickly on the teaser. Before yesterday, seven different players have taken a penalty in the fixture since 2017. Name them. You've got Tavernier, Morelos and Christie.
Should we go for the stick-ons first?
Right. Odson Edward.
Yep.
Lee Griffiths.
No.
Oh,
he's blown it.
Moussa Dembele.
Yes.
I've done as Roger. Apologies. Scott Sinclair.
Yep.
It's the last one.
You know something I have in my head? Jota.
No.
No.
I'm delighted you've done that.
Yeah, it takes the pressure off.
Yeah. Felt bad for a minute.
It's funny because I actually totally remember this one and I would have got it straight away, but I understand why it's not one that springs to mind, right? Because he's I'm trying to elaborate on that. He's in that same team as Sinclair and Dembele and so on, but much less of a goal scorer.
I don't remember that at all.
Much less of a goal scorer. But he took, I actually think I think it was Hampden. I think it was a cup game. Yeah, it was. It was a cup game at Hampden.
Honest, don't remember it at all.
Now, and I'm wondering, I think it was the same day as Moussa Dembele scored one at Hampden. I think it was the case. So Celtic
James
got
Forrest.
So Celtic got another one and he took it. Or maybe it was the other way around, but I think they both took this day. Central midfielder.
Honestly,
Callum McGregor
represents Cameroon at international level.
Cham.
Olivier Ncham.
I just still don't.
And before
that.
We go, Gordon.
Quick, very
last
quick.
Last 4-3-3 Old Firm games, four outstanding Rangers goal scorers. Tav, De Boer, McCoist, DL, 1981.
See you tomorrow.